Hello, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborator, home to NARC Troopers. Today we're going to talk about something a little bit interesting. It's called How to Know If You're Still Alive. You know, with reality-bending multiverses, automatons, the advent of AI, and not to mention the vampires, aliens, the zombies, and the narcissist, are you sure that you even really exist? Okay, so that's the question that we're going to talk about. So the narcissist and the psychopath killed themselves a long time ago. They have moved among us ever since, vibrantly coexisting with the living, but tragically vacant and lacking a pulse. They adapt, assimilate, acquire, they enmesh, entrain, engulf, and they wear like a technicolor dream coat that is both seductive and stunning. It's beautiful. They may appear eccentric or unusual, and you can't quite put your finger on it. It's just something that's a little off, that's not quite right, and your intuitive voice is confused by all this swirling dervish that's happening. Yes, the swirling dervish. They are shapeshifters, devilishly delicious bites of your dream come true, yet tauntingly out of reach. They are ghosts among us, long dead, pretending to be human. So how do we know that we aren't one of the walking dead? Like, if they don't know, they don't have self-awareness that that's what they are, why would we think that possibly that has not happened to us? Maybe. Does that make sense? Like if they are unaware and that's reality, then what if we are unaware and it's really, and we are that? I mean, how do we know that we're one of the living since they don't know that they're one of the dead? Okay, so I'm going to tell you. A literal scientific explanation tells us that if you are breathing, all of the cells in your body are breathing. And this means there is a continuous breakdown of glucose and a continuous generation of ATP, which can be broken down by other cells of the body for energy. So there is a continuous production of and utilization of tremendous amount of energy in our bodies that's ongoing all the time. So just as life can be explained like this, as an epiphenomenon of carbon chemistry, there's also a consciousness that cannot be explained as an epiphenomena of electrochemical reactions between your neurons. There is more to being alive than cellular processes. I think even single-celled organisms like amoebas have that. NASA defines life as a self-sustaining chemical system capable of Darwinian evolution. Some experts get a little more specific and they lay out 7 properties of life. And what are these properties? Well, the first is organization. And when I go through these, I want you to think about this in relation to the person you know with narcissistic personality disorder. See if they possess any of these 7 signs of life. The first is organization. That means that living things are made of cells and they need to have specific parts that know how to do their designated job. Secondly, living things must have metabolism. This includes all of the biochemical processes that take place in something that is alive, right? The third property is homeostasis. That means that living things regulate the conditions inside their bodies so that they're having a kind of, they adapt to their surroundings and do what they need to do to be self-regulating to survive, I guess. Finally, the last property of life is evolution. Let's think about what can I say about evolution. I have some notes here, but I forgot what I was going to say about it. Living things must be able to change and adapt over time. So you have that again, kind of evolution. It's that whole Darwinian concept. And some of these are kind of overlapping. What are these properties? NASA said there was seven. That's not seven. Okay, I can't count. But so why am I telling you all this? Let's just cut to the chase. What it means to be alive from a less specific perspective. There are several hallmark qualities that constitute living life forms. Number one, emotions. Now, this is, yes, we have established that because you have cells and evolution and homeostasis and all of this, scientifically, you are a living organism. We've established this, yes, but even though you may be a living organism, you're not technically a living thing unless you have these. So number one, emotions, which is pathos. If you are truly one of the living, you are capable of empathy, compassion, reflection, regret, remorse, pity, love, intimacy, fear, sadness, grief, and joy, and more. Our emotions are authentic, unfiltered responses to the world around us. They are necessary components of our existence. Sentience means having the capacity to have feelings and requires a level of awareness and cognitive ability. Sidebar, I make it a rule to try not to eat sentient beings. I don't eat mammals, things that give birth. I have a little bit of poultry, comes from an egg. I would probably eat a bug or a snake if I were starving. And I'll eat products. I mean, I'm not vegan. I eat dairy and cheese and ice cream and stuff like that. But basically, if it's smarter than some people I know, like maybe an octopus, I don't eat octopus for that reason. And some other things that aren't necessarily warm-blooded birthing mammals, if they're sentient, if they're really smart, then I think I will take a hard pass on that. Okay, number two, in addition to emotions, to be alive means you have to have spiritual constructs. Humans believe in something greater than themselves. Most humans do. If not a deity, such as a god, then the concept of source or universal design or karmic balance or some esoteric organizing principle. It is an organizing principle that we ascribe to. Most people believe in something beyond the body. This is the source of faith and hope, and living things need faith and hope just as much as oxygen. What happens when you don't have those things? You fall into despair and hopelessness, and that is a wretched condition to be in. Okay, number three, emotions. We talked about emotions, then spirituality. Now, morality is number three. Morality and ethics. While all humans may be moral and ethical creatures, they do have some, they may not be moral or ethical creatures. We can name a few, right? Although they may not all be, they do have some concept of right and wrong. Their awareness that things that harm others are usually unnecessary and bad, while things that help others are usually the best thing to do. And they know the difference with varying degrees of gray in the middle. Humans are intrinsically built to recognize virtue and evil, good and bad, right and wrong, and those who have no moral compass simply choose to ignore this. And we all know that with the narcissist, person who has a personality disorder, cluster B disordered pathological malignant narcissist, they have trouble with those emotions. That was number one. They have no spiritual anything. That's number two. And they have no moral compass. They have no moral or ethical imperatives or things that direct their lives in any way. They're just totally absent. Fourth one is consciousness. All organisms have some degree of consciousness that can sense and respond to environmental stimuli. So consciousness is often considered the defining property of all living organisms, hence the plethora of medical directives to pull the plug, right? Not the same as conscience, which we could be divorced from our conscience if we don't listen to it. Consciousness is an awareness of being. Some people are incapable of integrating all the parts of their consciousness into one central awareness, which is again a what do we call it? A defining principle, right? That it's like it defines who we are. They can't do it, and they struggle through life to feel alive and validate themselves because they are lacking in this central awareness, this central identity. They don't have it. And then number five, forethought. We know that people that have NPD have zero forethought. They don't think like that. Their brains aren't wired that way. One of the key characteristics that makes us human appears to be that we can think about alternative futures and make deliberate choices accordingly, right? We can look into the future and see the causal effect between what we do and what happens as a consequence. As living, breathing humans, the ability to have foresight, to anticipate consequences of our actions, and the impact that they have on other people, plan for the future with clear vision and all of that. It's something that we develop and we hold on to. Creatures without such a capacity for this foresight cannot be bound into a social contract and take moral responsibility or accountability or anything. Once we become aware of what we cause, we may feel morally obliged to change our ways. Narcissists can't do it that either. So they have deficiencies in all five of these areas. Let's review those again. Number one, emotional emotions. Like they only have the ability to experience negative or ones that are delusional, infatuation, idealized, twisted, convoluted things that aren't reality. So their emotions are all jacked up. Spirituality, they have no concept of God or anything greater than them because they think they are God. Number three, morality and ethics, they don't know what that is. Somehow the whole thing escapes them and they just don't get the whole good and evil thing. Number four, consciousness, which is sort of like moral constructs and ethics, only it's the way that we or have organizing principles and awareness, an ability to be reflective, to look at the past and learn from it. This consciousness is an awareness of being, where you accept accountability when you need to for stuff. They don't have that. And forethought, obviously zero forethought. Foresight, I think, and forethought, they don't have it. So I'm sure that there are more things that define us as humans who are alive and thriving and surviving, but these five things that we just went over are the anchors that hold us to our existence as humans on this planet. There are those among us, who am I thinking of? You know who they are. There are those among us who do not possess these qualities. They are mentally sick, disordered, and diseased, broken, damaged beyond repair. Their humanity is just missing. They lack the qualities that healthy living humans possess. These five that we just went over are impaired, deficient, absent. And for all practical purposes, then, wouldn't that mean that they're dead already, that they are not part of the living? These Walking Dead may be people with NPD or psychopathy, and who can speak to the condition of their souls, you know, who can do that, you know. There's, I think it's what do I want to say about this? I have a theory that in far too many cases that something dark crawls into all the cracks and crevices in these people that are disordered because they're vulnerable, and I think these dark passengers sort of set up camp inside of them and influence them in profound ways. I could be wrong. That's my theory. It's not a science-based thing. How can you prove any spiritual construct? You can't, you know, it's what faith is. It's believing in something you can't see, in the intangible. But I do believe that very much so. And I don't know if they are aware of allowing this to happen to them or of letting these things into them. But I do know that many of these evil people who create the most destruction in their path will most likely have some kind of entity influence of Luciferian, demonic something. I don't know what it is. How could I know that? But I have, but from my experience and from talking to countless people, I do believe that when these people, the disordered people, died by killing themselves when they were really super young and replacing their authentic self with the false persona that was bulletproof Superman version of themselves so that no one could hurt them, the abuse would stop and the suffering and pain would end. When they did that, everything else after that was left them vulnerable and open to, you know, they were kind of like became magnets for this kind of universal energy, can we call it, or whatever you want to say about that. You should talk to people who have been through this and ask them what they have seen and experienced. That is supernatural in regard to the narcissist. It's not of this world, whatever it is. Somebody told me recently, maybe they're aliens from other planets. And then someone else said, well, maybe these aliens aren't like necessarily like in the context of extraterrestrials. Maybe they're have taken some corporeal form with a body to inhabit a lost soul, and that they are really sort of demonic entities of some kind. I was like, whoa, this is way too much for my mind to wrap around this. But I guess anything's possible, right? You got to kind of think outside the box. All of us who've seen things with our person that was disordered, we know that we were witnessing something that was not just, oh, well, the pupils in their eyes were dilated because they were excited. No, this was something else. You will find so many people to tell you about that, talk about that. It's something else. It's not just dilated pupils. It's something else. So I know that that sounds crazy, but let me tell you, some of the craziest and most unbelievable things are actually real. And you know, I've witnessed it firsthand. And I'm not going to go into it. I think I've told the story before about what I saw and when I saw it. It happened twice. And it's unforgettable once you see it, this thing. So, you know, it does no good to hate these people because, in a sense, they are victims too. And, you know, we can pray for their souls and hope that God is going to claim them and bring them back to life. But we, as mere humans, we can do nothing for them. You know, they are gone. They are ghosts. aliens inhabited by things that are hellish tyrants and evil masters who deceive and deny and feed on death and the death of the spirit. So I hope that you are one of the living by these criterion, these five criterion. We got the scientific stuff. I don't know what that is. There's like different scientific criteria of what makes us a living being. Interesting stuff. I want to share just a little tidbit of that with you. But more importantly, what those five things that are components of our humanity, of our humanness, of our aliveness with the emotions and the morality and the ethics, all that stuff. I hope that you have that. It may be broken, it may be disillusioned, it may be angry, frustrated, whatever, but you know if it's there. With the narcissist, it is not there. It is not there at all. If you are one of the living and you're not a narcissist or psychopath or sociopath, you can fight to stay alive. And no matter how much it hurts, that's what we keep trying to do, right? Because there are dark things around us, whatever you want to call them or name them or whatever you think about that. We know there's evil, evil in what is done to the weak and the helpless, children and elderly, and war and hunger and famine, and just the list is endless right now. The world is filled with evil things, and there's no other better word for it. It's evil, the way the people prey upon one another, and hate is an evil construct, isn't it? Isn't hate evil? I think it is. So if we have these feelings, no matter how much we have these five capacities, I won't call them feelings, then we have the ability to recover from what has happened and to build something, to build ourselves up again and create ourselves anew. I think that these dark things, they come for you if you let your spirit die. And no matter what, regardless of how difficult it might be, that lightness of being, that spark of life within you, it's your life force and your superpower. You have to cling to it. And it would be a good idea to forgive those who could not do that. They were weak. They failed. They did all they knew how to do at the time. Some people said it was a conscious choice to choose, used through the agency of their free will to choose the dark side. But I disagree because some of these choices were made at 4 years of age, 5 years of age, 6 years of age. How can you be held accountable for a lifetime of just crazy things based on a decision you made when you were five? It was a way to survive the bad stuff that was going on, and that's what they came up with to do, which is not good, but it is a tragedy too. Sacrificing your life and your light for them isn't going to save them. Whatever this thing is that dwells in them now, it wants you too. It wants you too. And it will use them as a conduit to get to you. I know this. It happened to me. So you can only save yourself. And I think you need to cultivate those five things that we just talked about, authentic emotions and all that list that we went through, a conscience, all those, grow those and pray for the ones that are lost. Leave the rest to a higher power. And I do believe that having a belief in a higher power is key, instrumental, almost necessity to healing from narcissistic abuse. Think about all those people that go to AA and stuff like that. You know, all these people work in the steps. God is in those steps. They don't take them out. Some people won't even go to AA because it's too, you know, faith-based, God-based. They don't want to do that step. They don't want to incorporate that in their recovery. They want to do it alone without God's help. But, you know, I want to tell you this before I go. I used to work in a hospital when I was super young and in graduate school, and I've seen people die, numerous people, from working in the hospital. And there's a good death and there's a bad death. And the people in the hospital who had the bad deaths were frightened. They were fighting it. They didn't want to die. They were scared to die. They were crying, grabbing the sheets, clutching at the nurses, trying to hang on to their family, screaming, weeping, gnashing of the teeth. It was horrible. They were terrified because they didn't believe in anything, religiously speaking. And I watched other people die who were strong in faith, who called for the chaplain, the hospital chaplain, to come beside them because they knew it was time, or their, you know, family asked them to come because they knew it was almost time. And there was prayer, and there was peace, prayer and peace that these other poor, wretched folks did not have. And it was a peaceful, good death, an easy letting go and moving on to something better. I want to be on that team when it's time to go, when I'm on my deathbed. I don't want to be the scared atheist who is scared to death to die and fighting it. I want to be the one that goes with prayer and love and peace and calm and something beautiful. And the same can be said in recovering from narcissistic abuse. Sure, you can get through it alone, probably. You can not summon any help from higher sources, powers that be. But I have found that this was something that brought me to my knees. You know, I was one of those people that only prayed when I needed something. And sure, I believed. I just didn't make it a very active part of my life. And then this happened. And now, because of this, I'm much closer to God, and my relationship with Him is stronger, and my faith is stronger than it's ever been. And I can say that I don't think I could have done it without some intervention, without some outside help like that. So keep that in mind. You know, each person has their own path, and you know, I believe that all roads lead to the same enlightenment. I believe that all the people all over the world with all the different religions, you know, there's good and bad in all groups, and they're all wanting to do the same thing, and to go to the light, to go to love and paradise and happiness and bliss and heaven or nirvana or whatever. They want to be in the good place, not in the bad place. And they all have their versions of it. But if you think about that, I think that there's some strength to be found there. So I hope that this kind of a weird talk today ended up being about religion a little bit, but it's also like, how do you know you're alive? Well, scientific ways, yeah. And then those five ways that are really the ones that I focus on, yeah. And we're not dead inside. We have a core. We have we're not hollow like these poor sick folks that did what they did and are what they are, run around creating havoc. We are not that. And so we are different. We can recover. We can fight to be better. You know, I hear one last thing. People talking about, oh, you're my queen. They use that a lot, the word queen. And I was thinking about that. I don't want to be a queen. I don't want to be a princess either. I want to be a soldier. I want to be a warrior. I want to be the one that's on the ground fighting and winning. I want to be a winner. I don't want to be a soldier on the losing, I want to be a champion. I want to be a defender. A trooper, like as in narcissistic abuse recovery collaborators, troopers, narc troopers. I want to be a trooper. I don't want to be a queen. Just a little sidebar there. Queens have boring lives and have to wear constrictive clothing and be polite all the time. And I want to be defending the weak, fighting for the poor, ending the suffering, and doing it by whatever weapon I can wield. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for being here. And I'm sure that since we're all here, we're all alive, right? And happy to be so, with gratitude to be alive, I hope, because it's important to have gratitude. And we are alive. We are not one of the walking dead. And we should just be so tickled pink about that. Okay. Have a good one. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye.